You're not human. That's hurtful. Are you that guy with the evil powers? I think everyone has dark urges. It's kind of my thing.
Welcome, adventurers, to this episode of the He Who Writes with Monsters podcast. I'm D. Allen.
And I'm Donnie B. How are we doing today?
Doing good. We are on episode 10, and that is a lot of episodes.
That is double digits.
Double digits. Hey, that's a special moment for us. We are both very ADHD. And making 10 of anything is a lot for a person with ADHD.
It is. But we did it. We're here. And this is going to be a good one. I'm excited for it.
Speaking of ADHD, I think we're forgetting something.
What could we possibly be forgetting?
I think we're forgetting that there is something coming out of a tunnel that is not supposed to be, and there is something that's supposed to be coming out of that tunnel that's not.
That is true. When we left off last time, Jason was exploring this magical waterfall in the mountain of this village, and you know, we left off, the water stopped coming out of it, and nobody really knows why. It's never happened before. They went to explore it, and that's where we left off. So today we are going to get into what is actually coming out of that hole.
I think I see it. Is it a shark? Is it a crab? I can't quite tell. What, Donnie, what do you think it is?
Well, I think it could be a crab. Kind of looks like a shark. Could it possibly be?
Well, could it possibly be a shab?
A shab! It's a shab. This is the first time we really see a monster in the wild that is more than just a hamster or a ferret. This is a real, like, actual test of Jason's ability to fight a monster. He is all alone with Hyrim. And he's going to have to do something about this.
He is indeed. And for those just listening audio only, we got an image of a shab up on the screen. And
yes, we do.
That image is made by yours truly. And I frankly really enjoy him.
Yes, this is the best visualization of a shab I think ever. It's just perfect,
possibly ever, and it is perfect, and I love him.
Yes. So for those of you listening audio only, we will have this picture up on our social media. You can come check it out on YouTube if you've got a YouTube. Definitely worth seeing.
All right, and now that we got that out of the way, we are introduced to what is coming through that tunnel. Jason and Hyrim now have to face that dude, and automatically, it's kind of like a very typical horror movie monster moment. You know, lurking through the shadows, crawling through, looking creepy crawly. And then in very Jason fashion, just smashing tropes left and right, he takes it hardly serious when he's like, it's a shab.
Yeah. Yes, because we know his ability to identify things through his interface tells him what it is. It comes up, it's like, hey, that's a shab. And Hiram's like, what is that thing? And Jason's just kind of like, I think it's called a shab. Like, kind of offset, like, yeah, I think that's what that thing is. And Hiram's like, well, whatever it is, we got to fight this thing. And Jason pulls out his knife, and in all of his glory, Hiram goes, "Are you any good with using that thing?" And Jason's like, "Nope. Well, I'm not, but we're going to try."
Right. And then Jason is like, "Well, I have essences, but they're really new." And he's like, "Well, you can try them out here. You're in luck." And Jason, love this line, is like, "That's exactly what I was thinking. How lucky I am."
Yeah. Yes. Very sarcastically. Like, yeah, lucky is the word I would use here. And this is one of my favorite parts of the book and just the way that Shurtalune writes, right? So we'll go through this whole Shab fight and then the subsequent Shab fight that we'll get to in a little bit here. But throughout these next 2-3 chapters, we really get to see, I think, almost every one of Jason's abilities being used in a combat scenario. Everything aside from his passive abilities and Path of Shadows, which is a whole other conversation. But the way that the way that Shurtalune brings up this entire fight, you know, is really, I mean, it's very much, this is so we can see all of Jason's abilities in action and how they interact with each other. But it feels so natural. And it's not like one of those, I'm going to set this up for context purposes so we as the reader get to see it. It's hey, this thing happened. And oh, look, now you get to see all of these abilities in action right after he gets them. And it doesn't take you out of the story. It doesn't feel like a setup. And it's just the way that Shurtalune does it, and he'll do it in every book, in every situation. I love it.
Right. And you know, I've seen a lot of other shows do the, you know, testing of a power set in a very, like, contained, you know, like, I don't know, almost lab setting, as it were, where they're literally just trying out their powers. And this is a really cool way of, like, getting him to try out his powers without it being forced.
Yes. And even the situation in general, right? Like, oh, look, this weird thing has just happened that's never happened before, that's giving you the ability to show us what you can do. But even the situation itself is such a big plot point in other books later on. Like, this isn't just a random event for Jason. Like, this is a consequence of a bigger plot point going forward. And he just happens to be there.
This is a canon event.
This is. This really is. It's so amazing.
And I don't even remember what that larger plot point was. I actually don't remember this being connected to anything.
Really? Oh, yeah, this is
what was it connected to?
This is the whole start of, the Builder taking the astral space arc. Right, so this is happening because the Builder cult is in this astral space attempting to disconnect it from Palamustis, right? And this is, like, one of the first things that causes an issue that makes the Palamustians aware of it. This is how they launch the expedition to go into there and everything, right? So this is happening because the Builder cult is messing around in that astral space, but we don't know that yet.
Dang.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super connected.
I don't remember the Builder cult being there. That's crazy. What? I don't remember that.
That's like the entire arc of the first 3 books. That massive expedition that we see at the end of the first book that everybody in Greenstone but Jason goes on, where they go fight the Builder cult in the astral space, this is that astral space.
Dang.
Yeah.
In my mind, it was just they went to a place and did a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did, but they went to this place to do that thing.
Listen. I am super bad with details, but also I'm really good with other types of details. But those types of details, don't know why. Guess I can't.
That's why we're a team.
I would make a terrible detective. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll be Sherlock. You can be the Watson.
Listen, for real, I went to an escape room the other day and I did not do good. And like the employee there was even like, brother, are you serious? And I was like, listen, I don't know, man.
I'm here for the experience. These guys can get us out. I'm going to look around.
Right. Like, I'm going to hang out in this very small room and do badly. Yeah. I would also be, I would do very poorly on Palamustis. I will be real with you. I would not do well.
Well, maybe as an adventurer, I think you have talents that would make you otherwise employable.
Oh man. Terrible.
Terrible.
So now, if I can go on a little sidebar real quick. I feel like every form of media uses the same trope with spiders or crabs in that it's always the legs and the eyes, right? Go for the legs, go for the eyes. I get it. Makes sense. However, doesn't make for the most creative boss all the time. A shab, on the other hand, is fantastic. But I do want to just throw some kudos out to the Magic 2.0 series for specifically calling that point out, that crabs and spiders are overdone.
Yeah, they are. We haven't seen Kung Fu spiders yet, but...
However... Kung Fu I want Kung Fu spiders. Now... With all of that said, I still would love to see the shab fight done like in a TV or movie form. I think it would be a great like horror fake out moment because right when Jason like starts to fight the thing, he has like the trope idea. This is why I brought up tropes in the first place. He has the trope idea to slide underneath the shab and, you know, do the slice thing. And then realizes probably not a good idea because shark teeth right there.
He would be under a shab.
And I think Jason would survive a horror movie.
I mean, he basically has. The first few chapters were all about escaping the cannibals. That's your classic horror trope.
Damn, that's a self-contained horror movie. It's literally a Rob Zombie movie.
No, he would be very good.
No, but I do love that Shirtaloon likes to... He'll use tropes, but he also plays with the tropes and does things differently. Like, you know, this absolutely could have been cut all the legs off like any video game. Stab it in the eyes and then it's defeated, but you know, turn around and it spawns 12 more. Well,
we'll get to that.
However, I still think it would make for a really fun like just moment television.
No, Shirtaloon is really good at the, you know, we know all the tropes and sometimes a cliche is a cliche for a reason, but also let's have some fun with it, you know. I love it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, speaking of the shab and actually fighting him, we get our first look at a few of Jason's abilities. And this is really our first glimpse into how his abilities all work together. You know, Affliction Specialist is not a very widespread trope. You know, not a lot of that in media in general, which makes sense. you know, because it's very confusing at times. And it took a while. Like, I actually had to sit down with the book and go over every power and write it all out to actually map out how these abilities interact with each other when I was reading through it the first time. So I can understand that. That's what we're here for. We're going to explain it all to you guys. If you didn't get it, if you still don't know, you just know that it works, but don't know why, we're about to break it down.
Well, Donnie's about to break it down because I also don't understand the magic system. And I feel like some of our keen viewers may point that out. And it's true. I do my best to understand, but listen, it's a fun series and I enjoy it. I enjoy talking about it.
You're here for the literary side of things. I'm here to explain the complexities.
I just like Shirtaloon's funny words. He's good with the funny words. You know what I mean?
He is really good at that.
Okay, so I actually do have a question since you want to talk about powers and whatnot. So now, instead of sliding underneath the shab and doing the gut trope, he goes around the shab to nick one of the legs, or like get the knife in underneath the plating somehow. And it passes Leech Bite to the shab, correct?
Kind of. So Leech Bite is the name of the ability that he uses during the strike.
Right. So the question though is, so I mean, he channeled the ability through the dagger. Does that imply that he channeled a leech through the dagger that then like went from his blood through the dagger, then from the dagger into the shab?
I'm going to say no. I think Leech Bite is just the name of the ability. Because all it does is inflict or refresh bleeding, right? So all he did is make the crab shark bleed using this ability.
Oh.
Much like getting bitten by a leech.
Okay, so it's not like an infectious condition.
Yeah.
It's just
bleeding. It's just bleeding. And the reason that he has this ability in particular is so that he can guarantee the bleeding affliction regardless of really whatever he's using. So theoretically, he could hit this thing with a club and use Leech Bite as a special attack on the club, and it would inflict bleeding. Because that's what the power does. The dagger itself is inflicting leech toxin and necrotoxin. So it's dealing necrotic damage because of the magic of the knife itself.
Right.
But this is one of those big things. The Leech Bite as a power is kind of underwhelming just because all it does is inflict bleeding. But the bleeding affliction is something that prevents healing, which is super helpful for an affliction specialist.
Right.
So that's going to be like his opening move with a lot of his attacks and a lot of his battles. Keeping that bleeding affliction is critical for an affliction specialist because it prevents his target from being healed.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It's so funny how like in real life, it does technically work like that. Yeah. However, at a much faster rate.
Yes. Well, and that's what I love about the way afflictions are described in the books. Because really, realistically, all of the afflictions do what the words mean in real life, right? So like bleeding does negate healing. In real life, it's just a way of quantifying that in a magic system. So it's really cool.
Sure. Well, but you also have to factor, though, that most of these all have magical healing abilities as well. So a cut to, you know, a normal person is not going to be the same as a cut to a monster with magic healing. So you actually do need to refresh that bleeding condition, which I guess in terms of a human, you know, if a human had rapid healing, you'd have to consistently reopen the wound.
Yeah, because your body naturally fights bleeding, you know, by coagulating the blood and stopping the bleeding from happening. And so if you're continuously refreshing that cut, you're continuously re-slicing that cut, then all you're doing is continuing bleeding and losing more health.
Ugh. It gets very visceral in my head when we start breaking down the power sets, because then it's like refresh bleeding, like a paper cut. Yeah.
Ugh. It's just magically continuing to make you bleed, like,
Another thing I noticed is Shirtaloon's apparent love for D&D, because as he writes out this battle, it literally plays out with like an initiative order.
It does, yeah. And that's kind of...
It's fun to see. It is.
You know, that's the kind of turn-based scenario that D&D tries to replicate, you know, but so that everybody involved can think, and this is just happening... And he prescribes it, he describes it very quickly, so it's a constant action. But there is an initiative order to a lot of it, and it's so incredible. He's like managed to capture that.
Yeah, it's super fun to go through. And as I was like just reading through how they were doing the fight, I was like, dude, this is like straight up like a D&D combat, like. He's got like Hiram taking the, you know, his action to hold the pincers, and then Jason sliding around, and but in the process of the slide and slice, he gets knocked, you know, by the, so that's like the Shab's reaction to the hit, you know. So it's funny because it's like it's fun to see, like it's almost like reverse engineering real life through D&D. It's like you took real life, made a combat system out of it, and then reverse engineered it, and now we're getting He Who Fights with Monsters, which is like real life reverse engineered through D&D.
Yeah, it's so cool. And we also get a look at a couple of his spells here too, which are going to be very key to this whole affliction building.
Yeah.
So the next thing he'll do is cast Punish. Which is his spell that inflicts a little bit of necrotic damage, as well as the sin affliction. And sin just increases necrotic damage. Mm. So what's happening is he's dealing necrotic damage that's getting buffed by the sin affliction. So he's basically doing a crit. It's just an auto crit with necrotic damage. But this is the key. So sin will increase all necrotic damage. It's a curse. So now, every time the Shab takes necrotic damage, it'll be increased by the sin affliction. So that is going to build.
Okay, so then multiple instances of the sin affliction are unnecessary. You only need to cast it once. No,
so sin is a stacking affliction, and... additional instances have a cumulative effect. So if you have one instance, let's say for sake of argument, it increases necrotic damage times two. If you get two instances of sin, then it increases times four. Three of them increases times six. So every sin affliction is increasing the amount of damage taken. So the more you have on there, the more damage it deals.
Okay, that makes sense. For a while, I guess I just assumed it was one of those like just one use and like it's just like a simple multiplier. But I guess it's cool that it's a stacking multiplier. So that's that is cool. And I guess that's what makes an affliction specialist solid in the first place. It is,
because a lot of his afflictions are stacking, especially when he gets his full power set. A lot of the damage dealing afflictions are stacking, which is very crucial when it comes to Inexorable Doom, which he uses next. We get our first look at that. And what that does is it periodically applies an additional instance of any curses, diseases, poisons, or unholy afflictions. So the way it all works together, right? So Jason first uses Leech Bite to prevent healing with the bleed affliction. He then adds necrotic damage and poison with his dagger. Okay, just to get the poison on the creature, which can't be healed because of the bleeding. He'll then lock in Sin, which amplifies the necrotic damage that is being taken. And then when you have Inexorable Doom on top of all of that, right? So Inexorable Doom is going to periodically stack instances of Sin. It's going to stack instances of the poison that's already on it. And any necrotic afflictions that he doesn't have at the moment, but will have in the future. The big one here is his dagger's dealing necrotic poison. So when Doom adds an instance of poison, it's adding necrotic poison, which is doing more damage because of the sin affliction, which is also being added on. And so every single time Inexorable Doom adds an instance of everything, it's multiplying everything times two, and the damage is going up times four because of the instance of poison and the instance of sin that's happening.
So then Inexorable Doom is not stacking. Is that correct?
I believe is correct. Let me double check just to be sure. All right, so here's the actual description from the book. Periodically applies an additional instance of each stacking curse, disease, poison, or unholy affliction the target is suffering from. This is a curse effect. This effect cannot be cleansed while any other curse or any disease, poison, or unholy affliction is in effect. So all of the instances of afflictions that the target is suffering from that can be stacked is being stacked. Inexorable Doom is not a stacking affliction, even though it is a curse. So it won't add an additional instance of itself. And I don't think casting it again will add an additional instance of Inexorable Doom.
Gotcha. So this is like essentially like in MTG terms, this is like an artifact enchantment.
Yeah, I would say it's more akin to an enchantment. Yeah.
Just an enchantment.
I know as Jason ranks up and gets more powerful at bronze and or silver rank, I feel like it does become stacking. I want to say because his incantation. At some point, his incantation can be lowered to just suffer instead of your fate is to suffer. But this is like many books in the future. We'll revisit that when we get to it. So I do think he gets the ability to stack Inexorable Doom. Just not yet.
Now, Jason seems to be oddly proficient at using these powers, given that this is his first actual time using them. But we do find out that he actually pre-planned how his power set was going to go in terms of usage with the team. And that planning is like really paying off right now because he's able to go through this calmly, even though, you know, if a week ago he had seen this shab or even how long has he been here now?
3 days? 2 days?
2 days, 3 days. Okay. Yeah. My point still stands. A week ago, if he had seen a shab, he would not be trying to fight it. He would be screaming and crying. So he is taking this thing on pretty calmly for someone who's never used essence powers before.
And this is a big part of Jason's character in general. Like, he is able to keep his head and keep his calm in the vast majority of situations, you know, especially new situations. And, you know, having the intrinsic understanding of how his abilities work that comes with magic, and then being able to plan that out through, you know, the several hour long cart ride that they were riding through the desert, you know, basically all he has to do is remember what order he should use things in and then just do that, which he does really well right here.
He does. And I also think this is a cool allegory for real life, because, or at least in my current process of believing that Chertilun is speaking to us philosophically through his work, which I still think he is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I really do. But, you know, Jason planning his powers is very similar to, you know, what we can do as in our day-to-day lives of like, but like really thinking about what resources you have at your disposal. And that could be anything from talents, skills, connections, whatever, and really working through how to get from here to where you want to be. So, you know, I think him pointing out like how planning helped Jason think calmly is like Chertilun kind of saying like, hey guys, plan, yeah. look at what you have and plan with it. And you'll get where you're going, and you'll be able to think calmly if you
can. Oh, yeah. And this is stated a couple of times throughout the series. You know, Jason's when Jason starts doing like just stupid, unrealistic stuff and it works out, you know, his whole mantra is find out where you are, find out where you want to be, and then just be willing to do what it takes to get there. And that's, you know, this is a very minor 100%. Kind of low-key version of that. So he has powers, that's where he is, he wants to be able to use them, so they worked out a way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, I still believe that, you know, Chertilun is trying to get some larger points across with this series, because look at even just the name of the series, a Friedrich Nietzsche quote. Like, you don't name your series after a philosophical quote if you don't want someone to have a philosophical look at what you're talking about, right? You know?
Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that. It's just true.
And truth is sometimes all we need. Now, getting back to Jason planning his moves and acting calmly, when his power set is in proper effect, it, you know, it becomes a negative feedback loop for the creature who is on the receiving end of the powers. Because as soon as he stacks, or as soon as Inexorable Doom is on the creature, anything he does is going to stack. So every knife cut is going to add and stack necrotic damage and bleeding. So yeah, I mean, you know, as an affliction specialist, it's a very cut and dry way to go about things. Slow, but it is cut and dry.
And that's the biggest literally issue with...
More cut and wet.
Yeah, cut and wet. And that's the biggest danger when it comes to affliction specialists, because if you're... Like, if you don't have a healer to cleanse the poison or to cleanse the curses off, anything is just dead. It's going to die eventually. You know, like in this instance, he only needs a couple of instances and then Doom, and then he can back away. And a creature at a low enough level like this, it's got such a low life pool, it's not going to take much to kill it anyway. But, I mean, even that basic amount...
True.
Anything would die. Theoretically, even a gold rank monster would die with just what he's done here, so long as it doesn't have the resistances and the cleansing. It would take a very long time, but it would do it.
Yeah, and like you said, that is a big caveat, because a gold ranker is probably going to have some way, even a gold rank monster is probably going to have some way to negate, you know, entry-level necrotic and bleeding.
100%.
Now, and I mean, if it can't get rid of Inexorable Doom, that could be very problematic for it in the long run, because any affliction it takes, if it doesn't cure Inexorable Doom, any affliction it takes will stack and make it.
And that's worse. Why Inexorable Doom is so powerful as an ability, especially at this level, because you can't cure Inexorable Doom without first removing every other instance of curse or disease or poison. You know, so you have to full heal before you can even get rid of Inexorable Doom.
Right. And normal Shab guy here does not have that ability.
No, we do not.
Do we ever see a Shab in the future that is of a higher rank? Like, I'm assuming these are just iron rank monsters.
Yeah, I think Shabs in general are iron rank level.
And I mean, we've discussed before that, like, monsters don't have the capability to rank up. So an iron rank Shab is always an iron rank Shab.
Yeah, the big difference between essence users and monsters degrade over time. Essence users upgrade over time. So the magic levels go the other direction.
That's fair.
So when a monster spawns, it is as powerful as it will ever be.
That makes sense.
And then it starts degrading immediately, and eventually it'll break.
And will only get less strong. Yeah. Got you. Interesting. Back on the feedback loop that he's currently running with his powers, though, it is currently very reliant on that dagger.
Yes, it is. 90% of his damage is coming from that.
Because without that, at the moment, he literally doesn't... Well, at least as we've seen, doesn't have anything to add any kind of damage that would be stacking other than just bleeding.
Yeah, and that's true.
So he could attempt to bleed something out. If assuming he didn't have his necrotic dagger, like if he just had a regular knife, like his power set would be infinitely less effective at the moment.
Well, and there kind of is a workaround, I guess, with his current power set, because his punish ability, it does deal necrotic damage. It's not a necrotic affliction. So it doesn't stack, so he'd have to be, you know, constantly using his punish attack for that to even make a difference.
Mm.
And the Sanguine Horror does deal necrotoxin, which I believe counts as necrotic damage and would stack. But in order to use that, he has to fully summon Colin out of his body, which means he's not healing. So there's downsides to both of those. Having that dagger is just saving him a significant amount of trouble. And I guarantee if he didn't have that dagger, his very first thing he would do when he gets to Greenstone is find a necrotic dagger. So he does have sources of necrotic damage.
100%.
It's just 1,000 times less effective than his dagger is.
Now, on the topic of the dagger, as he's now stacked all of these afflictions on the Shab, he finds himself, ironically, right back in that story trope of having the opportunity to slice the Shab from underneath. Not the run and slice trope like he was going to do in the first time, so smart choice there. But he does get the opportunity to slice the Shab, upon which all guts spill out all over his face and mouth. But on the topic of the dagger, one thing I noticed, a neat detail, is he does all that, you know, goes through the grossness, whatever, stands up, and before sheathing his weapon, ensures to clean it off and put it away, right? And not only is that indicative of him, you know, having a good head on his shoulders for battle in future, it also indicates he's a good chef, because chefs and fighters both have really good knife skills and, you know, training and discipline with their knives. And I liked that detail because, you know, Jason is a pronounced chef, and we see that anytime he deals with a bladed weapon, be it a kitchen knife or what, he treats, you know, the blade respectfully, cleans them, and like I just like that little detail.
It's very much one of those moments. It's like, he might be new to adventuring, but he's not new to blades, you know.
He's not new to blades. This is already really solid discipline for him, and it shows moving forward that he is a very disciplined person, despite his goofy demeanor 100%. Most of the time.
And this is one of those moments in the book that I really like, because you just get this image, you know, the Shab is defeated, lying on the ground. Hiram is scuffed up, but, you know, not entirely disabled. Jason is cleaning his weapons and standing tall and confident over his conquest. And it's just this very, you know, hero at the end of a fight moment. And then he goes to loot the Shab and immediately hits the ground and starts throwing up because he forgot to clean all the guts off of his face. I love reading that. It strikes me as a, you know, big climax, end of fight. And now we're back to ridiculousness. He's down throwing up and Hiram's like, dude, you good? You gonna be okay, bud? He's like, oh. Yeah.
And also note that he no longer has the plus one benefits of the son-in-law eggs because his breakfast is now on the floor.
He has made a mess inside of this waterfall cavern quite thoroughly.
I thought that was funny though. I was like, oh, that's so funny. We had a whole episode just about eggs because of it. They made such a big deal about him and eggs, and we made a big deal about eggs. And then in the very next chapter, those eggs are on the floor, no longer nourishing Jason
true.
In any
that is
way.
That's very true. Oh, the poor guy. Now it doesn't matter what kind of eggs they are. They're done.
Now, the funny thing is, this Shab did not have very good loot. So it was like kind of a low loot for how high of a risk this was, at least for Jason. Yeah,
definitely not worth for the suffering that he just.
Yeah, he got a monster core, a potion, and 10 coins. And I mean, I think even with video games, this will be the case, but you get spoiled with quest rewards to the point that, you know, like regular loot rewards, you're like, ugh. Yeah. Whatever. I mean, I know I personally will disregard certain creatures when I take them out. You know, in an Elder Scrolls game, for example, like once you get to a high enough level, like when I kill a mud crab, I'm not going to run over and loot the mud crab most of the time unless I have a need for its chitin or something. But otherwise, it's just like, get out of my way. Like, I'm not looting everything. Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think we see later in the series that Jason ends up getting a power that just like auto loots for him.
Well, I mean, Shade will do that.
So he doesn't even have to think about it.
Oh, he does get his his execute ability. Is that the one you're talking about?
Right. Possibly, but my point still stands. Shade is one of his powers. So. Even if it's a sentient power, his powers are still looting for him. It's delegated. So another neat little thing I noticed here that I think really helps Jason in the normalcy of all of this. Well, the normalcy of Palamustis, as it were. You know, he's gained a lot of unguent from looting creatures as he's went by. And he offers some to Hiram. And he's like, do you know what this is? And Hiram just like smells it and is like, oh, automatically starts using it. And like doesn't even question that there's no name, there's no label. It's just like generic tin, you know. And I think that helped Jason feel a little more normal because he thought a tin of unguent just appearing from a monster was incredibly weird. Like what's even happening right now? So everyone else probably thinks this is weird as hell, but you know, he offers one of them up to somebody and the first local that sees one is like, oh, thanks. Heck yeah.
It's nice. I know exactly what that is. You know, thank you. So here's something I really want to get your opinion on. I've been holding off talking about it for a very long time because of this podcast. I want to get this on camera, on recording. So we get the end of this fight, right? We see Jason uses Blood Harvest to kind of top off his health and his mana and his stamina. And as we know, the incantation is, as your life was mine to reap, your death is mine to harvest. Which prompts Hyrim to say, you sound like an evil farmer. And which is crazy, by the way. That's just a good line. But throughout the entire series, right, people are constantly commenting on Jason's spells and his incantations. And it's always like a source of, well, he sounds evil, or, you know, is he actually harvesting souls, you know, type thing. We presume that magic has been a thing on Palamustis since its inception, right? Very heavily magical world for a long time. I personally would assume the idea of standardized incantations would just be a fact of life. Like, you think the understanding with spells in general is you say an incantation, it does this spell. The incantation is not specific to what you're doing at the moment. Like, you're not, like a healing spell, fireball, for example, you say fireball, you create a fireball. You know, nobody's going around like fire marble to create a small one or fire boulder to create a big one. You don't change it. Fireball is fireball, period. So you would think the idea of an incantation being the source of a spell would just be a thing. Like, it wouldn't be, why are you harvesting death? You know, you of all people should understand that's just the incantation, right? I didn't think it would be that big of a deal. Especially when he's healing people. Feed me your sins. A lot of people have an issue with that. I don't get it. I don't understand why people literally interpret spells, especially when the idea of incantations has been around on this planet since the beginning.
Now, that could actually just come down to more the Jason of things, in that Jason talks a lot of crazy nonsense that people don't understand all the time. So him just saying more crazy nonsense, they're just going to be like, what are you saying now, dude? Like, you're harvesting people? Like, I think the way Jason is with his words being very vague and intentionally confusing contributes to people confusing his spells for just, you know, things that he's saying.
I mean, I can understand that to a point, right? Like, he's not subtle when he's casting spells. And it's very obvious, especially with something like Blood Harvest or with Feast of Absolution. You know, it's a very involved, very dramatic display of magic that's happening. So when he says something like that, and then you have somebody's life force rise out of their body, my immediate interpretation would be he cast a spell. And, you're saying weird stuff, and now magic is happening. Like, why? That's life. That's life. You say weird things, magic happens. This is the world they live in. Shouldn't be a surprise.
Oh, yeah. I can see how that would bother you. I hadn't thought about that, but when you said it, like I said, my first thought was just Jason talks crazy. So, you know, like, it's just Jason's crazy.
But also, all of the nonsense that Jason talks isn't inherently now, evil sounding. Like, he's not just walking around saying things like feed me your sins for fun.
But again, he's
all of his nonsense is Pat Benatar and Voltron.
I mean, part of his nonsense is blasphemy, and people take that very seriously. So why would they not expect him to, you know, if he's blaspheming openly, hearing him say some stuff like this might just confirm their suspicions about him that he is evil. I really think this is less of a spell user thing and more of a Jason specific thing. Like, I think if a regular straightforward person had these same spells with these same incantations, I think maybe they would still be maybe confused a little bit, but I think on the whole, it comes down to the person using it.
Well, even on that strand, right, if it was somebody else using these same spells, I feel like there may be a little bit of, you know, are you a restricted essence user concern because the spells sound evil, but
sure.
I don't think anybody would literally interpret the spells even for somebody else. I don't think they should. Yeah, there's a whole monologue where this pops into my head all of the time. I don't even remember who said it, but somebody said, and I think I heard him say he was eating sins, which is not something you can do and is very weird to try. And I'm like, nobody should ever interpret that literally.
Oh,
it's one of the defenders in the fortress city during the surge. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, spell equals incantation equals magic. That should just be a normal fact of life. Nobody should ever literally interpret a spell because there's so many of them being used constantly.
I mean, maybe it's the constant use of spells that is confusing because you never know if someone's using a spell or if they're just talking.
But that's the thing. Magic is rarely ever subtle. So when magic is happening, it's obvious. Especially if you're an essence user, you have the ability to sense the magic that's happening.
Yeah, that is a good point. It could just come down to, once again, personal intentions, because like you mentioned, you know, if they think that this might be on the restricted list, you know, people do definitely go out and seek power sets. So, you know, they might assume like, bro, if you have a power set like that, like you must be actually trying to do some crazy stuff, because who goes and gets a power set like that?
Which is fair. And I can understand the concern for him being evil. I will never understand the literal interpretation of incantations. Mm-hmm. It's just a spell, bro.
I think I see what you're saying. I think I see what
It'd
you're
be
saying.
Like walking into the wizarding world of Harry Potter, watching somebody say Alohomora, and then looking at them like, why are you speaking in Hawaiian? Are you saying hello or goodbye? It's like, no, it's fucking magic.
Damn.
Get used to it. Anyway, I went on a whole tirade there, and I apologize.
You did. Now, speaking of magic in general, I did have a question, and maybe this is answered later, like you mentioned, when they come back to this space, but what actually stopped the water flow?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was simply the builder cult attempting to detach this astral space as a whole. There was some form of disruption in the aperture that caused the water to stop coming through, which then allowed the shabs to get through. So I think it was just them doing things, and it was like a power surge type situation. So they're messing with the aperture, which causes it to stop functioning.
Got
normally.
You. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, the water is no longer stopped. Or it's about to no longer be stopped. So I feel like we skipped around here a lot. But the Shab is finally dead. Right. We
yep,
looted him. So we know he's dead. Right. He's gone. So we skipped around a little bit. But so pretty much as soon as the Shab dies, though, before they can really, really collect themselves. One of the workers, one of the other workers of the waterfall comes running up and is like, hey, what's happening? The water stopped. And then the water unstopped. Wait, you know, I just realized. What happened to the other guy? Because he's up there when the water...
What other guy?
Goes, isn't he?
The guy that they... That they talk to when they first get there?
Yeah, he's on the other side of the fence.
So he is the guy that came back. So Hiram took over for him. He left... He was making his way back to the village. The water stopped, and then he came back.
Gotcha. But
so it's the same.
Oh, yeah. I just answered my own question.
Same dude.
He's on the other side of the fence, so he's not in the tunnel. So he's not getting blasted out of the tunnel. Cool. I was worried about him for a second.
just disappears from all existence.
Now, well, I don't think we ever hear from Griff again. So, in all intents and purposes, he did disappear. So, I will say, though, I feel like Shirtaloon probably enjoyed himself some Looney Tunes, because there's a lot of Looney Tunes style gags in here, and this is one of them, because Hiram's talking and he literally says, I think it might be time to get out of blasted by water. That is so it Looney is. Tunes.
So here's something I want to share with you. I want to share with you my vision of what's happening when I first read this and what went on in my head, because I think it's really fun. If you're watching this, go ahead and close your eyes and just be with me for a moment. If you are driving or listening to this podcast while operating heavy machinery, don't close your eyes. Pay attention to what you're doing. Make sure you're safe. If you're just laying in bed listening to this, go ahead and close your eyes.
Okay. What if you're recording a podcast right now? What do you do?
You could probably close your eyes.
Do I close my eyes?
If you want to. Are you currently driving or operating heavy machinery?
I mean, does a laptop count?
I don't know. How heavy is it?
Probably less than 10 pounds.
That's under a team lift. You're fine. We're ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
All right. So let me set the scene.
Anyway.
Right? So few things happen within here, right? So Jason, the waterfall stops. Jason says, should we alert somebody? And Hiram goes, it's a giant waterfall. I think they know. Right? And then after the Shab fight, we come up and Hiram starts talking about bringing the other adventurers in. We see Griff come back. Obviously, he found out it wasn't going and he came up. And the other villagers are going to see what's going on, right? And as far as we know, right, when you're first reading through this, as far as we know, the whole team, right, Rufus and Gary or all them, are tracking down the guy that betrayed them and interrogating him, right? So that's what we're assuming they're doing right now. So I imagine, right, you're at the, you're in the town, right? You look up and there's no waterfall. Everybody's confused. So you all gather as a team. And you all rush into the mountains, right? You're going up the path to go see what's happening. Whole party happening, right? Jason and Hiram are in the cave fighting a monster. They finish fighting the monster. Waterfall comes back on and they get blasted out through the tunnel, right? So I imagine a group of villagers halfway up the mountain trying to figure out what's going on. All of the sudden, two individuals come flying out of this tunnel at top speed, and now the water's back on. So now everybody stops, and I imagine them running back down the mountain to go see what that was about. And all of the time, the team is completely unaware, somewhere torturing some poor fool, and Jason and Hiram are flying through the air at probably close to Mach what the hell. The entire village is up on the mountain right now. And these guys are sitting here torturing some poor fool. Just complete chaos all around. Nobody knows what's going on.
Oh, that's facts. And I mean, imagine what would have happened if Jason did not survive here. The team doesn't even know what's going on.
They would literally walk back to the inn, realize Jason's not there, and then ask around to see what the hell happened to Jason. Like, hey, has anybody seen that little kid we came in with?
Hey, he got shot out of a waterfall.
Time out. Back up. What? Oh, like, I'm going to need context right now.
Thankfully. What more context do you need? Shot out of a waterfall.
Your adventurers figure it out.
Non-exist. Oh, thankfully, though, he has the Cloak of Night and gets to save both his and Hiram's life in this scenario. And it's like literally effortless. You know, I think we talked before about how it's like an extension of him. It's like mm-hmm. another limb. It's like effortless in saving them. You know, he doesn't have to think about, okay, I have to grab the air and, you know, hold it in a parachute like fashion. It's effortless. It literally just comes out and saves them, becomes a glider for them.
And this is the first time we actually get to see him using the weight reduction ability on his cloak when connected to another person. This is the first time he has the ability to test that out. That's kind of cool. Hiram thinks he's crazy, and Jason is having the time of his life.
He is. And I mean, I think Jason on the whole is a thrill seeker.
Oh yeah.
Because a lot of his plans in general just involve crazy nonsense. And yes, he does have a power set that can back it up, you know, in the future. Well, he has a power set that can kind of back it up now even, but his power set really leans into it in the future. But it brought a question to mind, though. Are there amusement parks for Jason to visit in Palamustis? Because what do thrill seekers do in Palamustis if they don't want to fight monsters? Like, if you're a thrill seeker but you're not an adventurer, what do you do?
I actually have an answer for you. So, amusement parks, I can't say exist because tourism doesn't exist, right? Much. And if you're always prepared for a monster surge, I don't think a roller coaster would be on your top of your to-do list. But we do find out from Amir, actually, later on, that, you know, higher ranked individuals who need that adrenaline rush and that thrill, a very common pastime for them is putting on a suppression collar and free climbing a mountain.
When do we see that happen?
I don't think we ever actually see that happen. We just hear it described. Amir lost one of his friends from climbing a mountain, I think. It was either Amir or Rufus's dad. One of the two said that, but that's a thing. They put on a suppression collar, they go climb a mountain. Like, just your hands, bare hands, up the side of a cliff with no powers, which is how a surprising amount of high rankers die.
Okay, now that didn't entirely answer. Sure. Well, that's an interesting question, and I guess personal acrobatic feats like that would be good. But I said non-essence users in Palamustis. What are they doing if they're trying to see the
thrill? Here's my answer for you there. as a normal rank individual in this world, I feel like your life in general is constant thrill and danger. Monsters are everywhere. You're relying, especially in this village, right? You're in this village. Your number one concern is a monster randomly showing up inside your house someday, right? With no way to fight it. We have constant threats and dangers. I don't think thrill is on your bucket list at that moment.
This is true. Now, one of our viewers left a comment on our last video regarding my question about guarding the astral space. And what you just said reminded me of that, about the comment they said, but it was like, why would they guard an astral space from something coming through when monsters just materialize? And I was like, I forgot about monster materialization entirely.
Yeah, they just kind of show up randomly and everywhere. I don't think that's a good point. I don't think guarding anything, they're going to find
it. I guess it like actually completely messed with me because I didn't think about monsters just outright materializing. In my mind, I kind of pictured an astral space of sorts appearing when a monster materializes. Like in the Monster Surge, personally, I mentally envisioned it like that scene in Infinity War where like astral spaces are opening up.
Monsters pouring out of the astral.
Or in Endgame. That's kind of how I... So now I guess I'm kind of confused about monster materialization. Since we're talking about normal rankers having to run from monsters, I guess just real quick, I want to touch base. How do they materialize?
We do actually this in one of the future books. We see a couple of different, actually see a couple different manifestations, right? So you remember when the Silver Rank Water Elemental appeared in the middle of the town, the middle of the city, and everybody had to kind of show up and deal with it, right? Yeah. So what happened is in the sky above where this thing appeared, there are a whole bunch of rainbow light, right? The transcendent light starts appearing and forming a vortex. It starts swirling around itself. This is how manifestations happen in general. The bigger or the higher ranked the manifestation is, the bigger the event is. So with a lesser monster, it's just going to be like a little area. You have something like Diamond Rank, it's going to be absolutely massive. But all of the magic becomes visible, swirls around itself, and eventually coalesces into either an Awakening Stone or into a monster or an essence or something like that. So that's how it works. So enough magic comes into one area, physically forms, and then poof.
Got you. Right, yeah. And I mean, we discussed that a little bit on the Awakening Stone episode.
And this is the reason that this doesn't happen here is because the Shabs come from the other side of the astral space. So they had already formed in the astral space. They're just coming through the gateway now. So we don't see that here because they're already existing.
Right. And I guess for me, it was specifically this instance that made me believe that, because this is the first appearance of a monster and it's coming through an astral space. Now, I guess I didn't factor in that it was weird and random in this town for this to happen. But in my mind, I guess it just ran with monsters just pop out of astral spaces. Like that's how they get into Palamustis. I totally need to pay more attention, I think.
Well, and that's the thing with the series, is it's so big and there's so much happening that it's easy to miss something like that, you know? The only reason I keep in mind as much as I do is because I've read through the series 4 or 5 different times. So I've had a lot of time to really memorize a lot of it. And I'm still only about 50%, I would say, of actually understanding all of it. There's so much.
Yeah, definitely. And the amount of knowledge that you have in this series specifically puts into perspective how much I don't pay attention when I listen to audiobooks. Because I'm just like, Jesus, dude, you know a lot about this. Like, where'd you get that? And they're like, the book.
Years of practice.
And I'm like, dang. You know, I wish I could say I paid more attention, but I didn't. And that's okay. But I will try to pay more attention in the future. But, hey, that's what we're doing this podcast for, to talk about this fun series. And I love it. I love it anyway. And I may not be the most knowledgeable on the subject, but hey, that's what we have you and our fans for.
Yes.
If anything, this is just a big learning experience for me.
For all of us, really.
Oh, man. Now, they were shot out of the waterfall, but they were not the only thing shot out of the waterfall, because can you guess what came after them?
I don't have to guess. I know. Shabs!
Shabs.
More shabs.
More shabs. More shabs have come out. I think it's definitely in the double digits, like 17. It's 17 of them. Shabs.
Jason counted 17 falling.
It's a whole mess of them.
And this is another instance of Jason's luck prevailing overall. Because he counted 17 shabs coming out of this waterfall. Most of them hit solid ground and died immediately. A few of them hit the water at bad angles and died immediately. Of the 17, only 4 of them actually made it alive. But they were not in great shape. Like, seriously injured. They're barely alive at this point. So it's a 4-on-2 fight now, but the other 4 are completely injured. And you could not ask for better than that.
That's true. Now, I will say, though, on your concept of the rest of the town being on their way, it might not have been entirely dire for them, but it would have been a lot worse. And I guarantee some of those shabs would have made it to the town. And Farrah, Gary, and Rufus would have had to play a little 100%. Cleanup. At that point, and it would have been a lot worse of a situation for the town on the whole. Yeah. Now, two little observations about what happens next, though, I really enjoyed. So, first off, the Cloak of Night allows him to walk on water, and we get the description of what he does is like, essentially note for note what happens in The Incredibles when Dash runs on the water for the first time.
Yeah.
Because he starts running and then he looks down at his feet and then he smiles and giggles to himself. And it's like, personally, my favorite moment in The Incredibles when Dash runs out on the water and he's like, ha, yeah. And it's like the same moment right here with Jason. Like, he runs out and he just keeps running and he's just like, ah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we know that he's been wanting to test this ability out for a while. He's just never had the opportunity. And I feel like in this moment, you know, he's like, hey, there's 3 of them over there. I got this. It's half of it is he's got a taste for the adventuring lifestyle. He's like, yeah, this is for me. And the other half is, I can walk on water. I'm going to walk on water. Yep, I got this. And he does it. And he's like, yeah.
And now the second part of that observation of what I liked here, though, is he's looting on the run. And that is like such good perception, because realistically, if it was me, I would not think to be looting and like just running down and touching the shabs as he's passing them to collect their loot. But obviously I don't have that power set. Jason knows his power set and is doing really, really good at utilizing his powers in this moment. And I love it. Like, it's just such a fun little moment. Like, he giggles and then he's just like, and back to badass loot, loot, loot. At which point, a whole group of kids across the water just had to watch a ton of shabs go splat. So that's got to be bad if you're a small child.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And this is one of those moments that shows Jason's personality, you know, beyond what we see here, right? And calling back to his past life on Earth, because, you know, he runs up to these children to make sure they're okay. And they're like, are those monsters? He's like, yeah, you need to go back to the village. They're like, are you going to fight them? Yeah, you need to go back to the village. Can we watch? And this is where he's like, all right, I understand kids. I know how to talk to kids, right? As he sits down, he's like, listen.
Yes.
I'm going to fight them. You can't stay here. You need to do what I say. But the way he does this is ingenious. And this works in real life with real kids, in case you're wondering. You know, he kneels down, gets to their level. He's like, listen, I've got a very important job, you know, and it can only be done by some junior adventurers. You know, I need you to carry out a mission for me. And, you know, he gives them all spirit coins. He's like, I need you to go warn everybody in town. Which, first of all, like, they don't know. Second of all, it's going to be handled by the time they even get back to town. You know, so it's kind of a goose chase errand, you know. But, you know, what he does here, he's like, he makes them feel important. He gives them an important task to get them to do what he wants them to do. And now the children are all running back to the village with a message that in case, you know, Hiram and Jason can't handle this, at least there will be a warning and the villagers will be prepared for it. But it also gets the children back to safety, right, and in a way that makes them feel as though they're an important part of this adventurer's mission. You know, they're not bystanders watching this. They are a part of this now. You know, we have, reading through the series, you know, we know that he has, you know, a little niece, very young niece that he's very fond of. He spends a lot of time with. So he's had the experience with children and knowing how to talk to them. And he's very good at it. He is a very charismatic person. And this is a part of Jason that, mm-hmm, you know, we haven't seen yet, a side of him that we haven't seen that develops his real character profile, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I love it. Like, I mean, literally my note here was just, he is so good with kids, and like, he's able, and not only is he just good with kids, he's good at getting into their perspective. Because, you know, an adult, if you tell an adult, like, dude, you need to get out, I got this, you need to go, the adult's like, cool, thanks, heard. But the kid is like, you know, they don't understand, they don't know the dangers. So, and I mean, I think that that's a big thing in general of just dealing with kids in any capacity, is being able to see things from their perspective, because they're not viewing it from the same perspective that you are. You know, you as the adult know the danger of whatever's going on. You as the adult understand the situation. The kid is like, new situation, don't know, what do, yeah, I do? I want to watch, that sounds fun. Like, brother, this is very dangerous. And yeah, so telling the kids no, the kid's just going to be like, why, exactly, why? You know, and that's it. Again, Shirtaloon just dropping life lessons, man. I'm telling you, everything in here, if you look at it right, it's just life lesson after life lesson. It's so
it really good. Is too, you know. And we have that, you know, Jason tries, he's like, you need to leave. And as soon as he understands that's not working, you know, all right, let's talk to these kids one-on-one, you know, get in their head, get in their perspective.
Right. Like, it's moments like this. And again, another good thing for real life. This is what makes a real leader a real leader. Because a real leader will go down to your level and explain things to you on your level. And Jason is good at doing that on any level, whether it's up, yeah, or down. You know, he can humanize on any level. And it's so good. I think this is,
in my opinion, this is probably his biggest strength throughout the entire series. And it will help him a lot. It will hinder him a lot. And that's kind of what it's about, you know?
That is. And now, with the kids out of the way, Jason has but a few moments to prep for, you know, three times the fight that he just had in literally every capacity. The Shabs, who just came out of the waterfall and survived, are now afraid of the water. They're not anywhere near the water. They're getting away from the water. And we are discovering... Now, I will be real. When describing the Shab, I, like, absolutely did not understand, like, how a creature like this would make sense in form of evolution. And granted, my little Shab here still probably wouldn't. But the minute it's on dry land, it's like, all right, I can see the evolutionary niche for this. Obviously, there is no evolutionary niche. Magic just creates monsters. So I'm assuming there's probably some god in charge of monster manifestations somewhere, somehow, I don't know. But if it were an evolutionary creature, I could totally see the way it moves on land fast, just like a crab, very fast on land. Crabs are crazy on land. They're creepy. Give that thing razor teeth. I can see what they were going for. You know, initially I was like, kind of a silly creature. I mean, even, you know, looking at the one I made, kind of a silly creature. But if this were real and you saw this, you wouldn't be thinking, oh, this is silly. You'd be like, ah, run, yeah. get away.
Oh, absolutely.
And for whatever reason, it wasn't until they were on land that the threat became understandable in my mind. Like, I was like, I've seen crabs move. They're creepy. Now imagine that the size of a bear or however big. I think he says a dog, right?
I don't know. I've always imagined them like a bear size.
Yeah, they're like, I imagine them pretty big. A bear size would make sense if you're able to slide underneath it. You wouldn't be sliding underneath a dog size creature. Not easily, creature.
No.
Okay, so a bear-sized creature.
A shark-sized creature.
Great weight.
Yeah.
Shark-sized creature.
Makes sense.
But anyway, yeah, they're terrifying, and I get it now. So Jason has to prep, and obviously seeing that they're fast, he realizes he's not super fast anyway, and he did obtain a potion from that Shab that he looted earlier, so it wasn't for nothing. It was a defense potion, which I don't know. Does that even come in handy here? Does he even actually get hit enough to utilize the defense potion?
It comes in handy for me as a reader. Because I absolutely adore this potion in this moment, and I'll go over that in just a sec. But it does come in handy in the fight. But we'll break that down when we get there.
Which we will get to.
So I'm gonna take you down another visual to show you kind of how I interpreted this whole situation reading it. Right. So we know as he's preparing, right, his goals are take the potion, the shell skin potion. Bring out Colin, draw his knife, you know, like, prepare for it. This is the fight that he's going to prepare for, right? So just imagine the whole situation, okay? They fall out of the sky. The Shabs appear. He and Hyrum are there. He's like, I'll get those three. You get this one. Darts across the water with his cloak on, you know, skimming left and right. Looting as he goes, all these dead Shabs floating down the river, gets to the other bank, gets the children out of harm's way, right? Stands there, draws his knife, full badass, right? 10 out of 10 badass moments happening, right? I just imagine him standing there looking at three Shabs coming his way. Just total, like, boss level fight music happening, okay? He takes the potion, his skin instantly hardens, like he is prepared. He goes to summon his familiar, and then realizes he can't cut through his skin because he just hardened it. Full stop. Like, ah! So he goes, tries to do it harder, right? Finally gets his hand open, gets a cut off, poisons himself because he forgot about the poison. Immediately takes him out of it again. Cursing himself. He's poisoned, and now he's got to pull up the combat log to figure out what the hell just happened. So he's sitting there like, hold on, reading through the instruction manual to figure out what to do next. And he's like, okay, I got it. Has to cut himself again, because Colin ironically healed the cut. Poisons himself again. Finally releases Colin. Now he's ready to fight. He goes from full badass to...
I know. I literally had in my notes, Colin heals up his own exit. Yeah. And it's so funny because you were totally right. Because in my head, the whole situation is super badass. Do. Slice. Nope. Slice. Nope. Poison. Slice. Finally. Yes.
Well, it's, if you really think about it, right? So this is what I imagine. Right? I understand that Colin is healing him. That's its job. And he has to actually summon Colin out of his body for Colin to appear. But the way that I see this situation, right? He cuts his hand open, poisons himself, gets confused, is looking through the instruction manual. Colin, I'm sure, is aware at some point that the plan is to come out. Colin's still inside his body. I just imagine one leech looking to another leech. I mean, like, watch this. Heals his hand while Jason's distracted. And then Jason finally figures out what's going on and like, oh, now I got to cut myself again. I just imagine the leech is losing their minds inside. Like, that was funny.
That dude, that is funny. It cracked me up. It's like that perfect scenario that like Jason trying to be edgelord in his mind always just ends up doing something that like completely cuts the foot out from underneath the edgelordness. And then he's just like, all right, well, back to being a normal person. One other thought though about Jason and just how he works. He's like a Venusaur, dude. He is like constantly buffing himself and healing himself. Like, he is a tank, but like not in the typical way of a tank. Like, he's like a tank that's just going to like, well, like Venusaur. It's grass poison type. He's going to heal himself and poison you. Up. Like, that is my firm belief that Jason is just Venusaur. And now I want to see some art of like a Venusaur with like Jason's power set. That'd be great. Jason. Or at least his image. I don't know.
Jason, a Cenosaur.
Jason, a Sonosaur.
I've got great news. You're an artist.
I am. And I do okay. I've never delved into fan art like that, so maybe I'll have to. You know, make a Jason Venusaur.
We'll put it on a t-shirt for you guys.
So Jason is tanked up. He is defensed up. His skin is hard. And when they described that, one last comment on that. When they described it, I immediately thought of like what it's like when you get like super glue dried on your hands and you got like that like rough skin. That's like super glue skin. So in my mind, that's what it feels like. And that feels terrible if it's all over his body. I wouldn't want to do that. But if I was fighting a Shab or multiple Shabs, I probably wouldn't care that much.
No, the discomfort would be acceptable in that situation.
But Jason is locked. He is loaded. And we are out of time.
Indeed we are. So we will have to leave you guys on another cliffhanger this week. we will get to the ultimate Shab fight, the showdown here on the next episode.
Yes. The conclusion to the Shab-like nonsense that we are experiencing today.
Indeed. So yeah, overall, right. I think this was a good episode. We talked a lot about Jason's abilities and how they interact with each other. I think it's amazing that Shirtaloon can set up a situation like this where we get to see all of his abilities in action and not have it feel like that was the point of these chapters, you know? We'll see the rest of his abilities in the next fight upcoming. And so it'll be fun to talk about those as well in conjunctions with what we've already learned. Overall, I love these chapters. Absolutely. I really do.
I do. And I mean, the further we get in, just the better and better this series gets. And I am excited. Personally, I am super excited to get into some more of the personally, I'm excited to get more into the political and social side of things. I really love reading those parts. It's some of my favorite parts of the series. I know you're Battle and Magic Man, but either way, this stuff is going so good. This series is so fun, and we love talking about it with you.
Yes, we're going to get into it, especially when we get to Greenstone. That is going to be a fun group of episodes.
It is. And for any fans out there, if you want to join in the conversation, please like, comment down below. Maybe to start a new little tradition, just want to throw a little shout out to our current top fan, Oliver.
Yes, thank you for being here with us, participating in the community. We appreciate all of your comments, and we love them. Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. We'll try to engage with them a little more. And everybody else, join in. Let's get the conversation going.
Yes. And you can find us at H6WM_podcast. We're available on Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, sir. So until next time, I've been D'Allen.
I've been Donnie B. Remember, fight monsters.
But don't become one.